Finally, no strategy aimed at fostering the emergence of a sustainable development path would be complete without a fundamental rethinking of the materialistic values that have driven much of the development process during the past century. A considerable body of academic research in recent years has examined the issue of the correlation between growing income and human happiness. The question itself might have appeared slightly quaint a couple of decades ago when economists and academia and policymakers in government and international financial organizations more or less accepted as an article of faith that higher growth and income would always be desirable and would increase human welfare, and along with it, happiness. Several insights, however, have contributed to a gradual change of perspective. First, the realization that however beneficial might have been the several decades of robust post-war economic growth in improving living standards, the global economy was beginning to run up against environmental constraints, which could actually be measured. Second, psychologists, newly empowered with analytical tools developed in other sciences, were able to show that human happiness was correlated with income only up to a certain level. Money seemed to be crucially important for happiness when basic material needs had not been met. But once these had been satisfied, the sources of happiness shifted to other concerns, reflecting deeper spiritual aspirations, including friendship, love, relationships, a sense of purpose in life, and security, among others. The level of income at which the correlation with happiness disappears has been estimated at around $10,000 to $13,000 US dollars, using 1995 US dollars. Nobel laureate Amartya Sen suggests that societies operate better on some presumption of trust. Here we refer to the need for openness, the freedom, as he says, to deal with one another under the guarantees of disclosure and lucidity. This is tremendously important for preventing corruption and other abuses and is behind the frequent calls for improved transparency in governance. Experience has shown that where there is trust, citizens and businesses pay their taxes. This in turn enables the government to formulate policies to achieve various social ends because the resources are available to invest in these areas. As societies see the fruits of these efforts, trust in the government is reinforced, and the country enters into what one can call a virtuous cycle of development. Of course, vicious cycles are also possible, of which the past half a century offers far too many disappointing examples. 30 years ago, there was very little debate about the role of corruption in the development process. It was certainly a taboo subject in the corridors of the IMF and the World Bank, where there was a tendency to separate technical judgments about the intricacies of macroeconomic policy from value judgments about the political domestic dimension. Fortunately, there is now broad understanding that openness and transparency are key drivers for prosperity, even when seen only as an economic efficiency issue, without framing the debate in moral, ethical, or religious terms. Where corruption is rampant, for instance, companies and individuals see paying taxes as a bad business proposition. In contrast, as noted earlier, in the Nordic countries, with the lowest levels of corruption in the world and some of the highest tax burdens, everybody pays their taxes because the benefits of doing so are immediately visible: superb infrastructure, a highly trained labor force, an extensive social safety net, excellent education, and so on. This suggests the need to broaden the definition of what constitutes well-being and investigate more closely the relationship between increasing market activity and the welfare of the people participating in the economic system. One starting point would be to establish a clearer mental demarcation between the concepts of growth, on the one hand, and development, on the other. The first is essentially a quantitative concept that captures the expansion in the scale of the economic system, while the latter, development, refers to qualitative changes in this system and in its relationship with the environment and other aspects of life in the community. Properly understood, Economics should concern itself less with how to add to the physical dimension of the economic system and more with the long-term welfare of the community whose interests the system is ultimately intended to serve. This distinction is quite fundamental. Herman Daly and John Cobb, in a famous book they wrote in 1994, argue that the global economic system will change in coming decades because, they said, it will be physically forced to change. To give a sense of the scope for additional expansion of the global economy, they observe then that as of the early 1990s, human beings were appropriating some 40% of the total territorial production of photosynthesis. An additional doubling of the human scale would leave very little energy left for all non-human species. Since, as they said, humans cannot survive without the services of ecosystems which are made up of other species, it becomes clear that another doubling of the human scale would put unbearable pressures on the Earth's ecosystem, if not actually become an ecological impossibility. The doubling time of human population at the moment is about 40 years. However, as currently formulated, the aim of development policy is to increase the average per capita consumption of global resources, thus reducing, in the absence of major technological breakthroughs, the length of time needed to double the scale of the global economy and its claims on world resources. Daly and Cobb concluded that, quote, unless we awaken to the existence and nearness of scale limits, then the greenhouse effect, ozone layer depletion, and acid rain will be just a preview of disasters to come, not in the vague distant future, but in the next generation. It seems to me that this prediction appears now to be coming true. The deep interconnection between care for the environment and sustainability has been the subject of increasing exploration. James Gustav Speth, retired dean of the School of Forestry and Environmental Studies at Yale University, believes the economy to be, and I quote, an inherently rapacious and ruthless system, unquote, and that, quote, it is up to citizens to inject values that reflect human aspirations rather than just making money, unquote. Al Gore dedicates an entire chapter in his extraordinarily prescient book, Earth in the Balance, to the role of spirituality and the cause of environmentalism, and had this to say about one such particular view. Quote, perhaps because its guiding visions were formed during the period of accelerating industrialism, Baha'i seems to dwell on the spiritual implications of the great transformation to which it bore fresh witness. We cannot segregate the human heart from the environment outside us and say that once one of these is reformed, everything will be improved. Man is organic with the world. His inner life molds the environment and is itself deeply affected by it. The one acts upon the other, and every abiding change in the life of man is the result of these mutual reactions. More recently, in 2015 to be precise, Pope Francis wrote, there has been a growing conviction that our planet is a homeland and that humanity is one people living in a common home. Interdependence obliges us to think of one world with a common plan. Unquote. The challenges posed by the above are further elucidated in the Prosperity of Humankind, a statement issued by the Baha'i International Community in 1955, which it seems to me remains highly relevant today. I quote, a culture which attaches absolute value to expansion, to acquisition, and to the satisfaction of people's wants is being compelled to recognize that such goals are not by themselves realistic guides to policy. As the experience of recent decades has demonstrated, material benefits and endeavors cannot be regarded as ends in themselves. Their value consists not only in providing for humanity's basic needs in housing, food, healthcare, and the like, but in extending the reach of human abilities. The most important role that economics must play in development lies, therefore, in equipping people and institutions with the means through which they can achieve the real purpose of development, that is, laying foundations for a new social order that can cultivate the limitless potentialities latent in human consciousness." Unquote.